do the state exchange? What does it look like? What kind of form is it going to take? How much is it going to cost? All of these questions need to be answered.
Working to implement aspects of the federal healthcare legislation. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Friday, February 10th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, senators want to increase funds for schools.
As a percentage of state funding, our investment in education is decreasing.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by Arctic Wire Rope and Supply, stocking a variety of tire chains from passenger vehicles to heavy equipment, on the web at arcticwirerope.com. Bristol Bay Native Corporation, generations of jobs, heritage, and history. Bristol Bay, a place that's always been, online at bbnc.net. And by
Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, committed to safety, operating the 800-mile Trans-Alaska Pipeline for over 30 years.
The Senate Resources Committee late this afternoon opened a series of hearings on a bill changing the state's oil tax regime. Revenue Commissioner Brian Butcher has been before the committee explaining the oil production downturn that he says began about the time the legislature passed the current tax on company profits as worldwide oil prices began to increase. The Senate Finance Committee begins informational hearings Monday morning, comparing Alaska to other oil-rich parts of the world. The Senate today passed the bill increasing funding for local schools by $30 million in next year's budget. During both Education Committee and Finance Committee hearings, school boards and administrators have said they need a lot more money to avoid laying off teachers and cutting programs. In floor debate, Education Co-Chair Joe Thomas, a Democrat from Fairbanks, called it a modest increase of about 2% on an annual basis. He said the cost of not funding education is too expensive. He pointed to the correlation between education and corrections, saying that the money spent on the new Goose Creek Prison would be equal to a $1,000 per student increase, and he said operating it will equal a $200 per student increase every year.
And unfortunately, a recent report indicates that that facility will be over capacity in just a little over 3 years. It seems to me that building up our schools and increasing education opportunity makes more sense than building more prisons. As a percentage of state funding, our investment in education is decreasing.
The bill passed on an 18-2 vote and goes next to the House. Governor Parnell has already announced that he opposes using a formulaic approach to increase spending. Alaska is one of several states suing to overturn the Affordable Care Act, President Obama's health care overhaul. But behind the scenes, state agencies are quietly working on implementing various requirements in the law. One of those requirements is a health care exchange, which will work kind of like Expedia, but for health insurance plans. While the state studies its options, a bill moving through the legislature would also establish an exchange, APRN's Any Fight reports.
Alaska is not anywhere close to establishing a health care exchange, but the Parnell administration has taken the first step in that direction. Last month, the state hired a Boston consulting firm, Public Consulting Group, to look at options for setting up an exchange. Josh Appleby is the state's deputy director for health care policy.
The biggest problem, I think, is that we just don't have enough information to decide, are we going to do a state exchange? Are we going to do a partnership with the federal government? Are we going to let the federal government run the exchange themselves? If we do the state exchange, what does it look like? What kind of form is it going to take? How much is it going to cost? All of these questions need to be answered.
The exchange will allow consumers to easily find and compare health insurance plans online. Public Consulting Group is helping 13 other states decide how to implement an exchange. Appleby says the state will benefit from that experience, but the company will also have to take Alaska's unique characteristics into account.
Certainly, we deliver health care farther than any other state, and in different ways than any other state. So they can bring their experience with them, but they also need to apply that to, you know, what happens here in the state.
Alaska is the only state that did not accept a $1 million planning grant from the federal government, and the state is paying Boston Consulting Group $200,000 for their work. A few states have exchanges in place, and more than a dozen have made significant progress. Appleby says Alaska is benefiting from taking the slow approach.
We're learning from other states' mistakes, and we're taking advantage of other states' successes, and I think that's an advantage that we have in our timeline.
If the state hasn't made reasonable progress towards an exchange by early next year, it may set the stage for the federal government to do it instead. That's why Senator Hollis French, a Democrat from Anchorage, is hoping to convince other lawmakers to pass his bill establishing one.
Once you realize you're going to get an exchange imposed upon you from Washington, it only makes sense to try to create one that works for Alaskans.
Governor Parnell does not support French's bill, and Senator French does not support the administration's work.
I think the governor's making a mistake by circumventing the legislature and, going without our input.
It's unclear how much support French has among his colleagues in the legislature. He expects to bring his bill to the Senate floor for a vote soon. Senator Kathy Kiesel, a Republican from Anchorage, will not vote for it. She agrees with the administration's approach studying exchange options. Asked to speculate on how the bill will fare, she says the focus right now in Juneau is on just one thing, oil taxes.
Wow. It's really sucking the air out of the room. And so I don't know what chance this has of actually getting all the way through the process.
But Senator French is optimistic. He says other aspects of the Affordable Care Act are controversial, but the health care exchange is not.
It's really about just trying to find an affordable insurance policy for the citizens of the state. And most people can agree that that's a good thing. They may disagree about how you get there, but it's a pretty rare person who doesn't want to see more people covered by insurance.
The administration expects the consultant study and recommendations to be ready by the end of March or early April. But Appleby says the state will wait until the Supreme Court rules on the Affordable Care Act in June to decide how to move forward. In Anchorage, I'm Annie Feit.
There's a candlelight vigil set for missing barista Samantha Koenig in downtown Anchorage this weekend. KSKA's Daisha Eaton has more.
It's been more than a week since Samantha Koenig went missing in Anchorage. For several days now, her father, James, has been camped out inside a motorhome next to the coffee stand where his 18-year-old daughter worked. He says the stands are not safe.
You know, you can put all the silent alarms in them all you want. If it had an air raid horn on it, I guarantee the guy would have ran off. Because from what I've heard in the video, there were men walking out of the Alaska Club when this was taking place. You know, these coffee stands do not need house windows in them that can fit a human body through. All you need is enough to fit a 20-ounce cup of coffee through it.
Koenig's father added that there should have been a buddy system in place at the coffee stand and that his daughter should not have been required to close up shop alone. Photos of the petite brunette have appeared on billboards and bulletin boards across the state and on the internet since Koenig went missing February 1st. Police say security footage shows her being led away from the coffee stand by an armed man in a hoodie. The man allegedly entered the Common Grounds Espresso Hut in the parking lot of the Alaska Club on East Tudor, then walked away with her toward the old Seward Highway, and she hasn't been seen since. Cash was also reported missing. The case has been classified as an abduction based on Koenig's demeanor and the man's actions. A candlelight vigil is set for 6:30 p.m. Saturday night in Town Square in downtown Anchorage. Koenig is 5'5" and 140 pounds with brown hair and brown eyes. Anyone with information leading to her whereabouts is asked to contact the Anchorage Police Department. In Anchorage, I'm Daisha Eaton.
Still to come on Alaska News Nights. Alaska News Nightly, sea ice problems continue for crab harvest.
Before the ice closed St. Paul down, we got about a third of the crab in, and the plant has, just huge daily capacity, well over 500,000 pounds a day.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Doyon Limited, Interior Alaska's regional native corporation, providing oil field services, government contracting, and natural resource development in Alaska and across the nation. Information at doyon.com. The State of Alaska Department of Revenue reminds you to file online now for your 2012 PFD. Also, paper applications are located in your community. More information at pfd.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by the State of Alaska.
A bipartisan bill that's on a fast track to the governor's desk got through the House today and will be heard in the Senate Monday morning. The measure delays current law requiring candidates to file their campaign finance reports online. Those reports go to the Public Offices Commission, which has had problems getting the computer system to work for everyone who has tried it. Supporters of the bill say they are delaying the change because not everyone in the state has internet service and the paper forms are still necessary for them. Anchorage Republican Mike Hawker explained that none of the information required in the reports will be changed, only the method used to deliver those reports. But he acknowledges some false starts in the transition to electronic filing.
Electronic transition is not easy, and again, we have to be very careful that we ourselves, in our interest of providing transparency in the public process, do not compromise the very objectives we seek to attain.
Fairbanks Democrat David Guttenberg said he was one of those who had trouble filing online, even though he has a fast broadband connection and an up-to-date computer at his home. The system at APOC simply wasn't ready for widespread use.
Testing needs a way to go, and in the private sector, they do a lot of testing. And then when they're finished testing, they test it again. So I think we need to give them enough time because I think all the different people that are engaged in campaigns, and there's a huge variety of skill levels. We need to make sure that it is right.
The bill passed with one vote against it. The House waived the usual paperwork formalities to rush it to the Senate, where it was read into the record moments before adjournment. The Senate Rules Committee will hear it Monday morning at 10:30. The top three Yukon Quest leaders are running tight, but the group behind is not giving up as teams head over the next 500 miles of trail toward the finish in Whitehorse. As KUAC's Emily Schwing reports from Dawson, Quest rookie Jake Berkowitz is sandwiched right in the middle of accomplished veterans at the front of this year's race.
When he started the race, Jake Berkowitz had a goal in mind. He wanted to be Rookie of the Year and finish in the top five. But when he set that goal, he didn't know what he'd be facing.
That first half of the race was not the most enjoyable race in the world, and that was an easy year, I guess. So these guys are tough that come back every year.
He admits his rookie status has slowed him down in the race.
Yeah, it's a new trail. It's a new race for me. You know, these long runs I'm a lot more comfortable doing in races that I know. But long runs in an area you don't know tends to lead a little more to problems just because you don't know what you're going to encounter. And when you're doing long runs, you really need all your ducks in a row.
Teams are facing a hard and fast trail in Canada. Berkowitz leaves Dawson City in fourth place, just 2.5 hours behind the leaders.
You know, when you're racing against guys like Lance who are 100 pounds lighter than you, a hard trail is the biggest equalizer. A hard trail, weight doesn't matter anymore. Once that sled kind of gets going, they're not really having to dig into it like they do, like going up and over the summits or stuff like that.
There's no forgiveness coming from the field behind him either. When they get back on trail, five-time finisher Brent Sass and Quest champion Sonny Lindner will be right behind him. But Berkowitz says he's no stranger to competition.
My parents raised me to be a very competitive person. I don't think I even won a game of Candyland until I was like 10 years old or something. I mean, they'd beat me when they were teaching me, just to teach me that winning doesn't come easy.
Berkowitz says regardless of the teams around him, he's confident his dogs can get him to Whitehorse in a timely fashion.
As soon as you start looking behind you, you start making mistakes. I'm not going to push my dog team harder to stay in front of someone, and I'm not going to hold them back because I'm far enough ahead of someone. So we're going to race, you know, even if we were in front, we'd still race hard, you know. Yeah, these dogs are capable of it, so we don't want to sell them short.
Reporting on the Yukon Quest Trail in Dawson City, I'm Emily Schwing.
This week, the community of St. Paul has been at the mercy of the elements. KUCB reporters Alexandra Gutierrez and Stephanie Joyce have this story on how both fire and ice are disrupting the island's economy.
Firefighters in St. Paul stayed up through the night trying to put out a large blaze in the middle of town. A warehouse owned by Trident Seafoods erupted in flames at about 10:30 p.m. Thursday. While the fire has continued to smoke through the afternoon, a group of 25 responders, including Coast Guard personnel, have been able to keep it from spreading to nearby buildings. Because of the fire's central location, area residents were evacuated to City Hall. According to Fire Chief Casey Alberg, no injury reports or missing persons notices have been filed with the St. Paul Department of Public Safety. The department is now in the process of investigating the cause of the fire. Alberg adds that the building is expected to be a total loss and that cleanup could be tricky given the materials inside.
There was a large volume of chemicals stored there We have been told that there were oils and possibly some fuel and some other hazardous materials.
Firefighters have surrounded the building with boom to contain any runoff or waste. The Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation is keeping an eye on the situation, but they aren't doing any response work yet since the fire is still in progress. Trident has also hired an environmental consultant to study the impact of the fire. The Trident warehouse was built during the 1940s, and it lies in the middle of 400-person St. Paul. The company stopped using it as a plant about 15 years ago and has long since removed any valuable equipment. Now, Trident mostly uses it to store salt and fiber, and they lease some of the warehouse space to Native Corporation TDX. But as Stephanie Joyce reports,
the destruction of that warehouse isn't Trident's biggest problem this week.
Fire in the warehouse won't really cause any problems to us at all. The only problem we got right now is still a little bit of ice out front.
That was Trident President Paul Padgett. He says the St. Paul Harbor has been iced in for almost a week now, making it impossible to deliver crab to the processing plant. Trident is one of the largest seafood companies in the U.S., and its St. Paul facility processes much of the nation's snow crab harvest. Padgett says he hopes the ice is a temporary inconvenience.
Before the ice closed St. Paul down, we got about a third of the crab in, and the plant has, you know, just huge daily capacity, well over 500,000 pounds a day. So once that ice moves back a little bit, we can finish up, and you know, it's really, unless the ice were to remain there into late April, we have no jeopardy whatsoever of getting the crab in.
Ice almost entirely shut down the snow crab fishery 2 weeks ago when it blanketed the fishing grounds. But Jake Jacobson, the executive director of Intercooperative Exchange, the largest crab harvesting group in the Bering Sea, says most boats are fishing again. The cooperative has hired an ice-breaking tug to help keep the St. Paul Harbor clear so boats can make deliveries. It's expected to arrive on Saturday, but Jacobson says it remains to be seen whether it will be able to plow through the thick ice pack outside the harbor. Reporting in on Alaska, I'm Stephanie Joyce.
And I'm Alexandra Gutierrez.
University of Alaska Fairbanks administrators have placed the dean of the school's community and technical college on paid leave and will search to replace her. Susan Whitener is being removed after a little more than 6 months on the job. KUAC's Tim Ellis reports.
University officials aren't saying much right now except to confirm that Whitener is no longer actively serving as dean of the community and technical college, or CTC.
All we can really say at this point is Susan Whitener has been placed on administrative leave, and I'm not at liberty to share any additional information because it is a personnel-related issue.
That's Bernice Joseph, Whitener's boss and UAF's vice chancellor for rural, community, and native education. The CTC falls under the college on the UAF organization chart. Joseph says she expects the university will be releasing more information about the reasons behind Whitener's ouster next week. Whitener apparently was relieved of her duties earlier this week. Word about the unexpected move trickled out over the past few days. Whitener was not available to talk Thursday. Three calls placed to her office by KUAC throughout the day were not returned. Joseph says Michelle Stalder, an associate dean with CTC, has been named as interim dean. CTC's enrollment averages about 3,000 students per semester. Classes are held at 11 locations in Fairbanks and around the interior. The college offers 1- and 2-year certificates and degrees in some 40 career fields. In Delta, I'm Tim Ellis.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Timing is everything. A mother who waits until her child is at least 2 years old before becoming pregnant again has a better chance of regaining strength and energy between pregnancies. Her baby is more likely to be born on time and at a good weight. So talk to your healthcare provider to find out how to plan your pregnancies and ask for the state's free birth spacing booklet. Take the time to build a strong and healthy family. This message sponsored by the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services.
Whether visiting Barrow or attending business in Juneau, APRN goes with listeners wherever they roam. Your company's message can span across Alaska on 26 stations. Find out how by calling 907-550-8437.
Ketchikan,
Kotzebue,
Dillingham,
Sitka,
Chugiak,
Fairbanks,
Fort Yukon,
Wrangell,
Barrow,
Unalaska, Dutch Harbor,
Alaknarechamute.
This is AK on Alaska News Nightly. I'm Mark Earhart. This week on AK, love. Valentine's Day honors the most wonderful feeling in the world. It's overwhelming, enchanting, frightening, and empowering. It can be salty or sweet, and sometimes it's both. There really isn't anything better. Love is what we're after in this life, and any one of us are lucky to find just one person to share it with. In celebration of this most venerable emotion, we travel to Kodiak, where KMXT's Jennifer Canfield met a group of five friends whose hearts are filled with music.
This is the Kodiak High School Jazz Band. They're really good. Five of the members have been playing together since middle school. Ben plays the drums and talks a lot. Daniel plays the piano and talks very little. Josh plays the trumpet and is the romantic. Gene plays alto sax and is more practical. And Brendan plays the trombone and is really chill. They're all seniors except for Josh, who's a junior.
So what's it like when you guys are playing music? Like you're playing one song that you're really feeling this song. Like this is that experience.
I go nuts. Personally,
yeah, he does.
I'm going balls to the wall. I mean, that's just because
You just start shouting.
I get into this kind of mode where I can't really think of anything that's ever. My life doesn't really exist behind my head when I play music, because that is my life. Like, when I get into a song that I'm really into, I forget about everything that's ever happened, and I just go nuts.
Would you compare it to that even?
Heck yes.
With music?
Describe, what do you mean by that?
Elaborate.
There's a bubble, and... So it's like a bubble, it's like a jazz love bubble, and the universe surrounds the bubble, and you feel like nothing is there.
Yeah.
But at the same time, everything's there.
Yeah.
Right there, in that moment, nothing else matters because everything's okay. You're playing music right now.
Just as a group, you have chemistry with each other that's different from what you have with your other friends.
Oh yeah, there's something here that doesn't exist. Yeah.
Like, what is it? Can you describe it?
Well, I hate these guys, but I hate everybody else more.
It's kind of like I'd say it's the same as
feelings mutual.
It's kind of similar to a sports team or a rock band or something, or any group of people that care about the same thing, and we push each other to be the best musicians that we can, and it's kind of like a family thing.
We're so in tune with what each other does. I know things that Gene does. Like, when he does something, I know what to do to complement that. Or when Daniel does something, we have this group feel that is kind of we're not really, when we play, we're not really six individuals. We're basically one organism.
And that's pretty much what love is, right? Feeling like you are one with another person. In this case, a group of people. Some will spend their entire lives seeking out this experience. And here it is, five teenage boys who found it. Proof that love is everywhere. For AK, I'm Jennifer Canfield.
Now it's time for the segment we call 300 Villages. This week, we're heading to the Arctic community of Ambler near Kotzebue.
My name is Don Thurman, and I work out at Ambler High School. Ambler is a little village. We're at the junction of the Kobuk and Ambler Rivers, and the Jade Mountains are right due north of us. And if you go south, it's basically tundra all the way past Shungnak. And we're just about 70 miles or so inside the Arctic Circle. It's beautiful here. We've got a little forest all around us, and some of the prettiest water in the world, and great fishing, and lots of caribou. It's the greatest place in the world to live. And this weekend, we are having a City League tournament, and we're inviting anybody and everybody to come on out. We invite villages from all in the area to send teams out, and then we have trophies, individual trophies and team trophies. And the whole goal is to have a lot of fun. We play basketball Friday night, all day Saturday, Saturday night, and sometimes well into Sunday morning, like 2 or 3 or 4 o'clock. And it's basically our big fundraiser for the year for all the activities that go on here in the Ambler High School and the middle school. We have a pretty good group of adults who are great basketball players, and we have a pretty decent high school team, both boys and girls, or high school age kids anyway. And then our volleyball, we went to state 3 times in the last 6 years. It's just a neat place to raise a family, and you know, there's, you can do hunting and you can go snow going, and it's just a great place to live. Lots of wonderful people.
That's Don Thurman, a teacher in Ambler. 300 Villages is AK's attempt to put every community in Alaska on the radio. Thanks for listening to AK this week. We had help from Jennifer Canfield in Kodiak and Annie Fite and Dave Waldron in Anchorage. Tune in next week for more unique stories from around the state. I'm Mark Earhart.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. You can follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Dacia Eaton in Anchorage, Emily Schwing on the Yukon Quest Trail, Tim Ellis in Delta, and relay reporters Alexandra Gutierrez and Stephanie Joyce in Unalaska. Mark Earhart was our AK guest host this week. APRN's Dave Donaldson reported from Juneau and Annie Fite from Anchorage. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Josh Edge is our web producer. And I'm Lori Townsend. Have a great weekend.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Rasmussen Foundation, accepting online nominations for the 2012 Distinguished Artist Award until March 1st. Learn more at rasmussen.org.
And by
the statewide BP Teachers of Excellence Program. Nomination forms are available at bpteachers.com. Nominations are due by February 14th. Subsistence is a significant part of the lives of many Alaskans. If it's important to you, consider applying for a seat on your local Federal Subsistence Regional Advisory Council. The councils provide vital information to the Federal Subsistence Board on subsistence hunting, trapping, and fishing. The deadline to apply is February 17th. Call 1-800-478-1456 or email subsistence@fws.gov for more information. This message sponsored by U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.